I don't want a big ol', just wanna ride on my motorcycle.
Hello everybody and welcome. This is the Nokomoto Podcast, episode number 216-ish. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. It is only a couple hours since we recorded our last episode, but it's probably been a whole week for you guys. What does that mean? Nothing. We're just rolling into another episode. Hopefully, banking an episode helps us keep a regular podcast drop schedule. We know we've been horrible on dropping podcasts for about a year and a half, maybe longer. Swigs, you're with us this episode.
True.
I'm your host, MotoGP. I'm with you this episode. And again, we have Patreon listener Josh with us this episode.
Hey there.
We might get a surprise drop-in from Scooter Dan. We'll see. He was supposed to be with us. Something's happened. It doesn't matter. We will persevere on. Oh my gosh, what are we going to talk about this episode?
Well, guys? I should just say, like, if you think that you can do better than this idiot Josh, if you can come on and provide some better material, you have the option. You can sign up as a Patreon member for $5, and you can be on the podcast as well.
It's true. Now, we're going to do best worst bike in the world this week, and then we had some subjects to talk about planned with Dan, but he's not here, but we're going to do our best to navigate through those anyway. Oh my gosh. Guys, it was pretty intense last week. I drank a lot of beers, and guess what? I'm still feeling the effect of those beers right now, magically. But we're going to get through this, and I'm going to try to keep it together without slurring too bad, but it's going to be a challenge.
I didn't know the time difference was that great. You guys, a couple of hours? I waited a whole week.
Well, it's a time warp. Right, yeah. It's a little bit of a Rocky Horror Show picture thing.
Time warp again.
Yeah, that's a special relativity for you.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna jump right into best worst bike in the world this week. Is what we're gonna do. Let's stop floundering. Let's just get down to brass fucking tacks. Okay. All right. This is. Let's do it. All right, everybody, this is the part of the show where me and Swigs have each chosen a motorcycle. We don't know what each other have chosen. It's always going to be a surprise. Now, some of you are going to get butthurt. You're going to lodge complaints. You're going to maybe start a riot. You're going to take to the streets in Portland and take over a couple square blocks and declare that you will not give it up until we say that your favorite bike is the best bike in the world this week. But guess what? It's not that easy. Okay. If you really want to take issue, send comments, concerns, complaints, criticisms, anything you want to contact at nokomotopodcast.com. And remember, there's no crying in motorcycles. Having said all that, Swigs, you have worst bike in the world this week.
I do.
And are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
All right, here we go. And the worst bike in the world this week is?
The 1998 Suzuki GZ250 Marauder.
Oh, the baby Marauder. Ooh. So this is like the Virago 250 or the Rebel 250, but this is Suzuki's take on it.
Well, no. Yes and no, except because... So there is the Marauder, which is... There is the VZ800 Marauder, which was, I can't remember what it was, the smaller version of. There's like an 1100 or 1200 Suzuki that it was the equivalent of, but it was like the baby version. But they transferred the name down to the GZ250.
Right, this is the baby Suzuki Cruiser before the Boulevard line.
I believe this came after.
Really?
And was discontinued before the boulevard finished.
No. So halfway in between the boulevard line, this popped up and disappeared.
Yes.
Huh.
Now,
so this didn't even deserve to be Suzuki's off-brand?
They may have done it as an off-brand, but what I can tell you is that the only place that I have ever seen a GZ-250 Marauder is in my and in the parking lots of other MSF courses.
Okay. Well, Suzuki has another 250, don't they? Like, one that they still sell? Don't they do the, like, a sort of, this was only 98 and 99?
Yes.
I want to say this is pre-Boulevard. I don't think the Boulevard name came up until, like, 01, 02. Oh my god, this is only 15 foot-pounds of torque claimed?
Yes.
Wow, that is low. Even the Rebel pulls something like 17 or 18 claimed.
This is essentially, it's, I'm trying to think. What's the Yamaha, two-valve, dual sport?
The Yamaha two-valve...
Is it the TV, the TZ, the T-something, or something T-250?
I've been drinking, I can't remember, but okay. Like
the TL-250 or something?
The Yamaha... are you talking about the, I can't remember. Josh, you're going to have to help us out here.
It's the,
like an older one or a newer one?
They're making it today. XT250. There we go.
Oh, the Seraph. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
The XT250, except that it's even more detuned and has even lower torque and carbureted.
Now, I'm going to stay true to shit that I've said recently where... You know, this is only 20 horsepower claimed, but that's more power than you think it is. The diminishing returns on horsepower really starts at about 17 or 18 horsepower. You know, more horsepower starts feeling like a lot more horsepower until you kind of get to the 17, 18, 20 horsepower number. Now, will 20 horsepower get you to 100 miles per hour? Fuck no. Will 20 horsepower get you to about 75, 80 more miles per hour? Yes. So we're talking about a 250, you know, entry level cruiser bike. Now, I can't, you know, I mean, that is low torque at 15 foot pounds, but I mean, if we're putting this up against a 1998 Rebel 250, I can't say that this sucks in terms of numbers. However, why do we revere the Rebel 250 and not the GZ-250 Marauder, right?
Because people bought the Rebel.
Well, right. Why didn't they buy this? That is the question.
Well, it might have something to do with the fact that it's a 27-inch seat height on a bike with 20 horsepower and 15 foot-pounds of torque.
Well, yes, but
this is like we've reviewed some really small bikes and a lot of small bikes that we really like, but this is for something that is configured as a cruiser, a comically small bike.
Okay.
This is a bike that is in every single like non-Harley MSF course, like in the shipping container in the parking lot. Because there's going to be one or two girls with too short of an inseam to ride any of the other bikes. That's why it's there.
I think the big problem with this bike is that it's a two-valve single. right? So, for example, right?
Well, upstairs, two valves, air-cooled, and carbureted.
Right. Yes. So, upstairs, we've got a Honda Rebel 300, liquid-cooled, four-valve, 25 horsepower, and pushing about, like, 18, 19 foot-pounds of torque. And it's just enough to make it a usable bike. Right?
Right.
I ripped it all up and down the PCH in California. I rode it around San Francisco. Like, I took it over the fucking Bay Bridge and shit. It was absolutely fine. Was it an excess of speed? Fuck no. But was there a moment where I was like, holy shit, I don't have enough power to do this? No. Maybe if I was 5 horsepower lower, I could have been like, I don't know anymore, right? If I was 2 or 3 foot-pounds of torque less, I may have started to feel it for modern traffic, right?
Right.
So we're talking about a motorcycle that was available, that is not yet vintage, which is not up to modern traffic. Because I'll admit, there are plenty of people that may have ridden, less experienced riders that may have ridden that Rebel 300, that may have felt it was not up to modern traffic. I think it absolutely was, but I'm a pretty confident rider. If you're... I could see myself really having to wring the tits off of something like this to really hang in modern traffic. And I ride a 50cc scooter around town all the fucking time, right? But as far as the highway goes, this is really fucking hairy. And this is less than 25 years old. And, you know, at 250 and whatever, puts itself in a zone where it should be highway capable. But maybe it's not. Right?
Yeah, I don't know of... I don't know of many other vehicles that are... that are 250 cc's, like, on the limit, that people would generally be just unwilling to ride on, like, a 65-mile-an-hour highway. And this is one of them. Like, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. So, this is the same motor... This is the same engine, I believe, as the Suzuki TU250X. That's what I was thinking of. So, here's the big problem with this motorcycle. It was a Suzuki TU250X with super lame, uncomfortably small cruiser styling, when you can have the TU250, which looks like essentially like an old Suzuki single from the 70s that you would, you know, putz around town or maybe do short highway stints with, right? There's something emotional about looking at this little bike that is Harley styling derivative. I mean, it looks like a Harley Softail that someone put a fucking Star Trek shrink ray on, right? And it looks like it should be able to do a little bit more. If you look at a Suzuki TU250X, which is the same motor and everything...
Like, just to put this in perspective, this is a cruiser with a 57-inch wheelbase.
Right.
This is a cruiser that has a 3-inch shorter wheelbase than the Futura or your Superhawk. Or, like, essentially, this is a cruiser that has a shorter wheelbase than... an equivalent wheelbase to a lot of super sports.
Right. What do we say all the time about riding in traffic, Sweeks? The number one thing you need to do in traffic is be predictable. Mm-hmm. Above all else, above being safe, above being well-trained, perhaps maybe above being sober, you need to be predictable. And when you're on a little bike like this that can't get out of its own fucking way, when you've got this weird cruiser aesthetic, you know, cruisers usually can get up and go pretty quick off the line. They run out of speed around like 80, 90 miles an hour, whatever. But no one's really ever used to having to wait for a cruiser, right? Now, if you look at the TU-250X, it kind of looks like a small motorcycle. It looks like a slow motorcycle. Old guys will look at a TU-250X and be like, oh, I had something like that when I was 17. I understand it's not fast. Now, is that a huge number of the population? No, but that's like, you know, 50% of the population or whatever. Some will be somewhat familiar with the idea that maybe you're not on a performance vehicle that can just blast out in front of everyone, right? It's not like it's going to be on like a 200 Vespa where the gearing is such that you can accelerate to 45 miles an hour as, you know, fast as fucking anything. No, you're just going to be kind of slow on this thing. But on a fucking cruiser that's trying to pull off Harley Sportster street cred, you really need to be approaching 30-something horsepower minimum and some decent torque so you can at least get off the line quickly. Or else, let's face it, Suzuki, you didn't understand the assignment.
So
yeah. Well, also, just because it's so comically small, it actually may present a little bit of a hazard in that it's mimicking the Harley aesthetic. And
right, yeah.
Vehicles in front of you may be smaller than they actually are.
Right.
Because this bike is essentially a 75% scale Harley Davidson.
So I was trying to look at photos of this thing, and I finally found one with like a grown man sitting on it that's not disguising just how small it actually is.
Right.
And now I get a sense for how it looks like a step up from like one of those toy mini bikes. Like,
yeah, it's a little bit of it's a small step up from the Dumb and Dumber bike, essentially.
Yeah. Like once I saw like it, you know, because most of the photos, like it's, you can't get a sense of the scale in most of the photos I was looking at. I finally see one where it's like, oh, that's how tiny it is. So yeah, there's gonna be that perception, even from non-riders who are just like, yeah, like those kind of bikes, they usually move, and then it doesn't. Yeah.
Ooh, I'm reading something now. It gets even worse. This is not actually the motor from the TU-250. It is a different motor, which is even more perplexing because why do they have a different 250 single for this thing? Because
it probably came from a world model.
The TU, I could believe, came from a world model. I don't know about this. It doesn't matter. The thing's garbage. Yeah, somehow the TU-250 is definitely, it's air-cooled and less, I think the Marauder's air-cooled as well. It doesn't matter. Point is that it's not really much better than the TU-250 motor, yet it is a different motor. Well, they're both carburetor, maybe it is the same, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. What is important is, I've heard of people doing kind of big things with these bikes, but you have to be a special rider. This is supposedly a beginner bike, but I've never heard of people doing big things with these motors, right? That's not entirely true. We did have a listener talk to us about riding over I-70 with one of these things once, but you know, our listeners are special people and gifted riders. Right. I refuse to believe that this is an especially awesome beginner's bike like the Rebel 300 is. Right. The Rebel 300 is engineered for that super duper light clutch and the right instrumentation and the weight distributed correctly and all those little wonderful things that make it so effortless to ride as a beginner. This is. It just doesn't look as easy. I mean, I've not ridden one of these, but it is even lower power than a Rebel 300, than a modern 300, even though, you know, like, a modern 300 is only like 20 cc's bigger than this, but it's just the fact that...
I mean, realistically, aside from super sports, most bikes have not gotten any more horsepower for the cc's over the last 20 years.
Well, these singles have because they've gone liquid-cooled and they've gone four-valve.
Yeah, but they've also gone from two cylinders to one cylinder.
Well, this is one cylinder. This is one cylinder, two valve, air cooled. So
it's just 9-to-1 compression.
Right. So if you do run this thing, you're going to be running it wide fucking open throttle everywhere you fucking go. You're going to be wringing the tits off it, and it's going to feel like it's going to explode everywhere you go. Whereas the Rebel, you don't have to hold wide open throttle. It's just kind of good. I'm with you. I can't go there. This is the complaint a lot of people have with these bikes, and it's really no different than a lot of others, in that it's trying to be a Harley Sportster at 250, and all of the big four OEMs tried this, and really only the Rebel worked. And the Rebel really only worked because Honda had the build quality and the price point to make it work for people. Obviously, this didn't connect with people. The only reason you need to know it's worst bike in the world this week is it's not on the tip of your fucking tongue, whereas the Rebel always has been, right?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. Like, why don't we know about this? Why don't we know somebody that had one? Right? If it's a little 250 single that was cruiser enough to get you around places, why don't I know a single person that ever had one? Whereas I must know 12 people that had a Rebel 250. That's exactly all you need to know. And I also, just the Marauder name just reeks of failure. Nobody loves a Marauder of any kind. There are
basically three iterations of Marauders that are the Marauder name that have been applied to three wildly different Suzukis. And if you just say, I have a Marauder, to somebody, like, if someone says, oh, what bike do you ride? So you say, I got a Marauder. First of all, nobody will say, oh yeah, I know what that is. But also, even beyond that, nobody knows enough about these bikes to ask, wait, which Marauder do you have? It's completely... Nobody... If you said... Like, this would be a perfect candidate for, is it a motorcycle?
Right.
Like, if you said, is there such a motorcycle called a Marauder? Like, that's a 50-50.
Yeah. To the average person. For nerds like us, we absolutely know it was a failure of a motorcycle, but you're right. This is also what you need to know. In a world where some people are actually starting to come around to the Viragos, the 500s, 750s, and whatever.
They're all dead to me.
Well, sure, but like, there are people that have been making cafe racers out of Viragos.
Actually, I will pull that back.
People that are doing choppers with them.
I will say the 700, I will give some appreciation to, just because it's a Chicken Dax bike.
Well, I'll tell you, the 700 Virago, say what you want about the styling of the rest of the bike, it's a beautiful looking engine. Just the engine? Yes. Oh. Bring one up on the screen. The Virago engine is gorgeous. On almost any Virago, in fact, but especially those 750, it is gorgeous. It looks like a motor from the 1940s, almost.
I'm going to pull up the 1100 just to spite you, because I walk past one of these every day.
I'm not talking about the rest of the bike, just the motor. The Virago motor is a beautiful motor. I'm not even talking about the way it runs, just the way the motor looks. That is, it looks more classic than any Harley motor you've ever seen. It looks more classic than any Triumph motor you've ever seen. It's just big fins all over the place. It's big and round. I love those valve covers.
I will say the one good aesthetic in terms of like a super classic motor that it has is how ridiculous ridiculously offset the cylinders are.
Mm-hmm. It is so classic looking and so wonderful. That Virago motor, whether it's the 500, the 1100, whatever, I love that motor. And no one's ever going to convince me it's bad. The now, the rest of the bike, you can tell me your issues all day, and I am all ears. I'm all ears. But the motor itself, I challenge you. Take just a good look at the motor itself. It's beautiful. Now, no one's ever said that about a Marauder. Not only that, these Yamaha Viragos, dudes are chopping these up. They're cutting off the fenders. They're raising them up and making cafe racers and shit out of them. People have figured out a way to live with Viragos, which at one point we thought was maybe going to be the most hated bike of all time, right? We all knew 5 years ago there was nothing worse in the world than a Virago.
I think that still holds true.
There are some people that are figuring out ways to live with them. No one, in a world where some people are making peace with Viragos, no one has made peace with a Marauder yet of any description, of That's any true. Displacement.
I'm not going to stop you. I don't want to stop you shitting on the GZ. I just want to stop you from heaping any praise on the Virago.
I'm only putting praise. I'm only putting praise on the engine. Only the aesthetics of the engine. Although it's not a bad running engine.
It's not great.
It's a really nice looking engine. If you put that engine in like a Vincent Black Shadow or something, you'd be like, holy shit, this works perfectly.
I get you what would. You're saying.
I don't know if it is better it's so than distracting a Vincent Black the Shadow motor. I know.
You have to like hold your hand over the rest of the bike and just look at the motor. But it is a beautiful mode. Like I said, it is more round and Harley and classic than any Harley ever actually was. If you could hold your hand over the rest, the Virago motor's really a good looking engine.
Well, or just do a search, just pull up the motor itself. Like just pull up
an find an eBay listing of a rusty one that someone's fucking pulled out of a bike. Even like rusted out and shitty just on a garage floor. You're like, oh yeah, I can get into that. I
get what you're saying. Yeah, the motor on its own. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can't say this for a Marauder. There's no redemption for a Marauder of any kind, let alone the slow one, right? There you go, Swigs. Look at that. It's not a bad looking motor.
It's all right. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to best bike in the world this week. What do you say?
Let's do it. All
right. And the best bike in the world this week is any 1 liter dirt bike.
Yeah, that's fair.
Now, okay. These are always one-off builds. There is no such thing as a regular one-off dirt bike. Now, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've all seen a YouTube video of someone taking, say, a Gixxer 750, 600, or 1 liter, and just making it into a dirt bike. And these always make some of my favorite YouTube videos.
I think my favorite is the 80s Goldwings.
Well, those are great. But, yeah. You know, recently some people have been taking this even fucking further. Mm-hmm. But let's just start with, like the Gixxer dirt bikes. Whether it's a 600, 750, or 1,000. If you haven't seen a video of someone, just Google Gixxer dirt bike. And it always involves a lot of crazy fabrication. It's a Gixxer engine and frame, but they've somehow put like a YZ450 swing arm and a crazy different shock and then insane forks and big old dirt tires and whatever. And these guys these bikes just drift everywhere. They're just sliding all over the place, even more than a regular 450. They never do seem to get a lot of air with them, and I don't blame them for that. But these bikes seem to just fucking rip. And it's like, okay, in a world where it's not hard to find a 200 horsepower bike, well, what if 150 plus horsepower counted for a lot more, right? Having over 150 horsepower on the dirt is like having 400 to 500 horsepower on the streets, right? It's kind of a way to cheat to double your power. And I just the way these bikes fucking roost when they take off is unbelievable. And it's been a while since we've had a best bike in the world that's just all about badass fucking power. And that's what I want to get back to with this. Putting a dirt suspension and tires on a Gixxer and riding it off road and putting a fucking beak on it and whatever. This is the shit that real men are made of. This is badass, on the edge of control, on the limit of horsepower, just fucking nonsense, ridiculous, balls to the walls motorcycling, and I love it. Swig's thoughts.
I mean, how can you not love it? This is,
I don't know, some people, well, you know, we've had a lot of talk about going back to like 125 two strokes or even like 204 strokes and really learning our basics and all that shit. But then sometimes I look at shit like this, like someone taking a Gixxer 1000 and setting it up for dirt and just fucking ripping. And I love it.
This is where you gotta ask the question, like, why aren't there 53 millimeter forks with 8 inches of travel when I want to take a 500 pound, 120 horsepower bike and do a tabletop?
I mean it almost makes me so, I mean, we're not too far from being able to just buy this bike stock, in that Buell makes a bike similar to this but with a really long swing arm for hill climbing, but we're probably 1 year away from Buell essentially making this bike in a V-twin, like a 1200 V-twin.
Yeah, Buell may be making the only bike stock that somebody will ever shorten the swing arm on.
I look at the wheelie this guy's riding out. It's so fucking sick.
I love it.
Oh, it's super dumb. I mean, having a Gixxer with fucking spoked wheels is so ridiculous. I'm all about it. And all these people, oh, look, here, he's doing a hole shot competition with some 450s. He's just smoking them. He's like four pike lengths ahead at like 50 feet. It's unbelievable. I don't know. Josh, thoughts? What do you think about this kind of bullshit?
Well, I had never seen this before, and pulling out photos of it, yeah, that's crazy to just, like, some of the shots where you can just see, you know, like, all the exhaust pipes coming out. It's like,
it gets dumber though. So there's another video, Swigs. It's by the channel is 999 Laser, and somebody has decided to join two Honda CR500 two strokes together with a common crank to make a 1 liter two stroke dirt bike, and it's even dumber. Because this is a CR500 frame. The exhaust is somehow weirdly routed above the engine. I don't even know where the fuel tank is on this ridiculous creation. It's set up to be a hill climber, but... Oh, you haven't found it yet. Oh, you got it? Yes, this is it. Oh, my God. Yeah, you got to find this video, Josh. 999 Laser The video is called Riding an Insane 1000cc Two-Stroke Dirt Bike. And this thing almost looks factory. Does it not, Swigs?
Well, besides the extended swing arm, yes.
Right, but I think you, on a 1 liter two-stroke, you need... I don't know if it's supposed to be a hill climber, or if they just need this custom swing arm to just stop looping it everywhere they go. Because they don't hill climb with it. They just fucking rip it.
And no, I think it's just to stop the bike from looping.
Yeah.
I think it's the only reason it's that long.
A 1 liter, two CR500 motors. They can't even kick it over. They have to start it with a fucking drill. It's amazing. I'm into all of this shit, right? In a world where the H2R kind of bores me, this is next fucking level shit, right? And it's sort of like the dirt bike version of when Whistlin' Diesel decides to put like four fucking turbos on a truck or something, right? Do you want to ride this daily? No. But are you glad it exists in the world? Yes. Right?
Yeah, it's cool. Like, I'll have to try and watch these later. Like, it's not playing, but I'm seeing the photos that you're talking about. Yeah, it's nuts to just have that kind of power. Like, I mean, knowing, like, taking my, you know, Kawasaki out, and you know, that's even a little less horsepower than what these are, and it's like feeling that on, you know, the street. Yeah, try and handle that on the dirt. Like, holy hell.
Yeah. A stock CR500 is absurd, unusable power for most motorcyclists.
And we're talking like high 30s in the torque.
Yeah. Now you put two of those together.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Well, let's just take like the Gixxer 1000. We're talking about 80-something foot-pounds of torque. We're talking like more than twice of what a 250... four-stroke's gonna give you for torque. I mean, this is just gonna fucking launch everywhere. Now, granted, the bike's really fucking heavy, so jumping it is gonna be a hairy proposition. But it doesn't really matter.
This is where you need, like, the 55mm forks. You need something to make that happen.
Now, is there a reason that this kind of bike doesn't exist in a stock form that you can buy from a manufacturer? Absolutely. It's so heavy.
Yeah,
it must be stupid. Yeah, it must be exhausting to ride, right? It's got so much power. Like, one of these would just fucking win Baja, except, well, I don't know if there's a class for it, but even if there was a class for it, I don't know if anyone's got the endurance for it, right? Yeah,
no, it would not win Baja because the rider couldn't finish the race.
Yeah, the rider would just die. But it doesn't matter. It's still awesome that these exist. And I bet it's hairier to ride these fucking 1 liter dirt bikes than it is a MotoGP bike.
Yeah, well, to ride it at any sort of track pace, absolutely.
Yeah, I can't imagine riding one of these at our local track. I don't know that I'd make it half a lap before I either just ran off the course or had to stop and just go like, all right, I give up. I'm not man enough for this shit.
Look, Travis Pastrana has redone all of Evel Knievel's stunt jumps on
original equipment.
Travis Pastrana has not done a pro track circuit on a 1 liter inline four adaptive
dirt bike.
Not
that we know of. I mean, he might have. He's probably dumb enough to actually do it. But yeah, the point is that this shit's not common for a reason. It takes ridiculous nut bars to pull this shit off, and I applaud them. And I'm just waiting for Buell to essentially, I mean, Buell essentially makes this bike that we're looking at with the, I mean, it's not a 1 liter two stroke, but Buell makes a bike with power numbers like this with an extended swing arm.
Oh no, it's a 1200.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Yeah, it's got the.
But that's as close as we get for something production.
Yeah.
And most people look at that Buell and they're like, this is dumb. Right?
It is dumb.
A regular CR500 scares the shit out of me. Like, two of them put together with a common crank, I don't know what I would do with that. I don't even know. Forget a Gixxer 1000. I don't know what I would do with a Gixxer 600 set up for dirt.
Well, that would bring it into the usable torque range. I would just put it immediately. I would start off in second gear, and then just
I don't know keep what you clicking do.
You can pull it off.
I love that this CR500 has cooling fins welded onto the expansion chamber, or not the expansion chamber, but the headers coming out before the expansion chamber on the exhaust, because the exhaust must get so fucking hot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because if you actually could ring that wide out and you found a place to do it, that bike would take under a minute to just start throwing rods.
Just for everyone that thinks they need bigger and bigger carburetors, this thing's running two Makuni VM32s. I tried to put two Makuni VM30s on my Honda CB350, and it, like, ruined the fucking bike, and everyone was, like, on the forums, like, no, this is what you fucking need. Yeah, you don't need big carbs for your bike, trust me. This is a 1-liter two-stroke still running 32s, and it's fucking making ridiculous power. You're fine, bro. Actually, I don't know if those are VMs now that I look them closer, but they're definitely 32s. I can tell that. Anyway, we're 40 minutes in. We've got enough. Oh, they are cans. We've got enough on best worst bike here, I think. Unless anyone's got any more final thoughts on 1-liter dirt bikes.
No, just ridiculous. But you know. Yep, great, someone's doing it.
Someone should be doing it. Yeah, we need idiots like
this.
Might
as well.
Alright, let's move on to our next topic. Our next topic, I wanted to talk about weird shit that motorcycle guys and scooter guys are into that isn't motorcycles and scooters, right? So, what are the crossover hobbies with motorcycles? I can think of a bunch off the top of my head. Do you guys want to start with one particularly that you're well versed in, or I can just
wait?
Throw
so are we doing motorcycles and scooters, or
both? So, for example, not every motorcycle guy, but a lot of motorcycle guys are guitar guys as well, for example. Even if they can't fucking play, right? But how many Harley Davidson dudes have like a $1,500 Fender Stratocaster or Gibson Les Paul just sitting in their basement that no one ever plays, right? It's a big number of dudes. They've got a Martin acoustic or a Gibson or a Fender or something. Even if no one ever
really
plays it.
I'm called out right now.
Well, at least yours is an Epiphone. You didn't spend that much money. But the point is that there's a lot of motorcycle dudes that are guitar dudes, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm a pretty big guitar dude as well. But I like to think I can back it up with actually being able to play. But I just want to explore this. I've got like 20 of these, by the way, of just like shit that guitar guys are into that, you know. So now the motorcycle guy that can actually play is a really rare bird, right? But there's plenty of dudes that will have a guitar and they'll play you like they know half a George Thorogood song, a couple blues riffs, and two Tom Petty songs, right? We all know this guy, right?
Yeah.
I would say some of the vintage bike guys, you know, you might get some bluegrassers in there, right? I would say in my experience with scooter guys, they're not really guitar guys. It's really kind of motorcycle guys are guitar guys. Okay, so here's another one, right? A lot of pilots are motorcycle guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of pilots first, and then they're motorcycle guys. But, you know, there's not a lot of guys who are sort of like mainly a motorcycle guy. Then like, oh yeah, I dabble around with airplanes on the side. They're kind of pilots first, but because they're pilots and they're hanging around, you know, fucking aircraft buildings and shit, it seems that every fucking airplane hangar just has a motorcycle in the corner. It's like, whose is that? I don't know. It just came with the hangar, right? That it just seems to be that way, right? Am I making this up? We all know this to be true. I haven't been inside a lot of airplane hangars, but every fucking one of them has a motorcycle of some description. I'm just saying.
Base it off of movies.
Look, it's not a law, but it feels like it is. Okay, so
there seems to be a nice connection there, just because, like, you know, you want to pilot a bike, pilot a plane. You know, like, it kind of goes hand in hand, like a sense of freedom, of also vulnerability. You know, in both of those situations, you're at higher risk. You know, than
this is true.
Other forms of transport.
Yeah, it's in that area. It's in that area, like, socially, of like, this is a really vulnerable thing. There's a lot of danger involved, but it's manageable risk,
right?
In which, if you're willing to fly a plane with a motor that, if it goes out at particular points, will 100% kill you, like, you are maintaining that, and then, you know, you apply that back to motorcycles and you're like, oh yeah, I'll absolutely do that.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of aircraft and motorcycle technology spillover, too. After the Second World War, so many of those aircraft companies went into making motorcycles. And those air-cooled motors, especially like your Boxer Twins and V-configured motorcycles.
A lot of French stuff from Renault. Also, right. Just BMW made planes.
They have their mechanical origins in aircraft. So,
by the way, if you're confused as to why BMW makes flat twin, like, motors, it's because that's what they put into fucking airplanes in the Second World War.
Exactly.
Just so you know.
And this goes for a lot of stuff. I mean, it even goes into, like, Vespa scooters, where they're basically an aircraft, like, body, like, monocoque, like, Presteel frame and all that shit. There's a huge spillover there, so that explains that. Here's a new one that I've noticed. Motorcyclists are really getting into fucking photography and drones.
I'm not a big fan of this.
I'm not either, but, like, we all know this, right? It's not a problem. It's just that, I don't know, every time I talk to some motorcyclist at a gas station now, he's fucking with a camera and a drone and recharging batteries, and they're going out. Well, I mean, they probably do this less in Pennsylvania, but here in Colorado, they're all riding out to some crazy spot to take a drone out and take all this footage. And I'm always wondering who this footage is for.
Yeah, I don't see that around here, personally. My guess is people who are trying to break into YouTube. Like, they want to become a YouTube or TikTok star.
Look, 80% of the internet, I feel, is, like, baby pictures of my kids, and the rest is just some asshole's drone footage, and then after that, it's some porn. I feel like it's like...
I think you've got all of those ratios backwards.
But it's like, I don't know. Like, there seems to be a lot of fucking drone footage out there. I don't know how much more drone footage of, like, Thompson Canyon we need. I feel like it's all been photographed pretty extensively, but these dudes are out there with their bikes and their drones, and they're riding out to places, and they're taking pictures, and God bless them, they're getting out there and doing stuff. But I weirdly, in the last few years, I think photography has become the number one sort of side hobby to motorcycling. Have you guys, like, felt this at all?
Well, I mean, I see it online, but it's like, oh, I just want to post on Instagram or Reddit kind of stuff. Like, look at my pretty bike, you know, or I took a ride out to this place. I have no clue where you say where it is, but that means nothing to me. It's just like a picture of your bike in front of, like, you know, some fall leaves, you know, like, I'm like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah, it's not uncool at all, but. I see a lot of these dudes out there fucking with cameras at gas stations, and if that's what they want to do, that's great. But I mean, it's not just the drones, it's all of the GoPros on the handlebars and the helmets, and then riding out somewhere and taking the fucking GoPro on the little hand gimbal to places, and there's a lot of it happening. And I just never traditionally associated photography with riding, but it's becoming a big thing.
Well, we also are. So you and I have always been very present people.
Right.
Like, we started an Instagram account for this podcast.
Yeah, gave up because I just couldn't be fucking bothered.
And how many pictures or stories have we posted to Instagram? We went to Mid-Ohio, and I think the only two things we could post are a video of you from the Friday burnout and a video of you drinking Malort for the first time. And that's really all we captured.
This year was not my first time drinking Malort. What are you talking about? You still that's need to send me that Malort video, by the way.
I emailed it to you.
Oh, you emailed it to me.
Okay, I couldn't text it to you. The file was too big.
Okay, that explains it.
Yeah.
that's how I am. Like, that's my Instagram has like 5 posts, I think, or something.
It's like, oh, you went on vacation?
Very spread out.
Show me your pictures. It's like, I didn't take any pictures. Like, why not? It's like, because I was there.
I was there.
I saw it. Like, yeah.
I lived it. I don't, like, I'm not going to look at them myself, so what's it matter?
Right.
So I have a terrible truth to reveal about myself. I went to the Taylor Swift tour. It was actually wonderful. It was really great. I go to a lot of concerts and I look at the performer and I'm like, I could do that or I could do some of that. I actually was watching this and I was like, there's no part of this that I could have done. Actually, it was pretty spectacular, but I also took me and Claire between us took zero fucking pictures because we were just there kind of experiencing the cultural event of the decade. And everyone else was taking pictures. Oh, do we need a picture of this? No. If we do need a picture, we'll just Google it. It's fucking fine, right?
Right.
It wasn't necessary.
Same thing. I have like a few photos and videos from Mid-Ohio, but not a whole lot. I didn't spend time like wandering around trying to take photos of stuff. I was just trying to enjoy being there. Doing.
Like, unless it's the wall of death, it's really hard to take a picture of Mid-Ohio and show it to someone because you're like, no, you don't get it. Okay, like here's like, you know, 6 people doing the barrel racing, but you don't understand how it is at 10:30 at night when everyone's got fucking glow sticks and LED lights on their bikes and headlamps and someone's got the flag out doing the starts and then there's like 14 bikes going around at the same time and then someone
also like
starts losing control
beer.
And
also before you watch it, pound 6 beers and realize that's where everybody else is at in that clip.
Yeah, it's really hard to take a picture of Mid-Ohio and show it to someone and then have them get it, right?
Yeah.
They're just not going to... it's like The Matrix. You can't be told what it is. You have to see it for yourself.
most of my photos there were like during the day going over to like the bike show at the infield and just the bikes that were on display. Like I took photos of those, but just once it was the shenanigans, it was like, yeah, whatever. Like I'm not going to waste my time. You know,
exactly.
I think I tried to record a little bit of the night barrel racing at one point, you know, like it was hard to record because it's so dark and it's like, yeah, you can see it when you're there, but it doesn't record well. So
right.
What's the matter?
Right. Yeah. So,
but I think that's why I say, I think it's people trying to break into YouTube or stuff like that, you know, or it's a replacement of the old style. Like, you know, there used to be a time of like, oh, sit down in here. I'm going to show you the pull out the slide projector and show you the family photos and stuff. Now it's just all digital instead.
Right. Well, I think we should just pull this back a little bit and just remember that this isn't just like shitting on people who like taking pictures. This is an observation that this is becoming a big crossover for motorcyclists as a hobby.
Yeah. What else have you guys noticed as a big motorcycle side hobby? Because we could say things like, oh, you know, custom painting or something, but these are a little bit more expected. Or, I don't know, motorcyclists, you know, like traditionally, and people be like, oh, what? Like if this was 1992 and you said, oh, what are motorcyclists into? Someone would be like, I don't know, getting tattoos, right?
Well, yeah, you can't say tattoos anymore because everyone's getting tattoos.
Right. But, you know, what are the motorcycle-adjacent hobbies? So, another weird one here in Colorado is fucking, like, driving around places and getting craft beers as well.
That's one. I'll tell you what's... This is a pretty... It's definitely a lot smaller than the camera crossover. But something that I have noticed recently is, well, at least in Colorado, I've noticed that open carry is getting more popular.
That's always been a thing. Well, it used to be concealed carry, whether it was legal or not. Yeah, now they're a little bit more into like really being proud about it. That, I think, is a minority of motorcyclists, but the ones that do it seem to do it really enthusiastically.
I've noticed it a lot more than I did 10 years ago.
Okay. But you know what? You bring up an interesting thing. Guns in general is kind of a motorcycle thing. Whether it's like collecting guns or shooting ranges or hunting or whatever, does tend to be a hobby that a lot of motorcyclists are into, whether they're quiet about it or loud about it. You know, like, yeah. Take like the Cleveland Moto guys, for example. They are not your stereotypical gun guys. But if you bring up the subject with them, they are not shy at all to tell you about how much they're into guns.
Right.
And I understand it. I'm not into guns, but I have some friends that are. And you can get really, really deep into the whole thing of, well, what gun is this? What different kinds of ammunition will this take? What's the right ammunition for the right kinds of targets at distances and speeds and the impact of the bullet and all these different things and guns that are good for, you know, targets far away, guns that are good for sport, guns that are good for different things, different kinds of targets, different kinds of target shooting. There's a lot of little weird nerdy things to get into. A lot of guns work on completely different systems, you know. Yeah. Whether it's your you know, your bolt action or your brake action, and you know, just mechanically they work different, and there's a lot of weeds to get into, and I understand the appeal of all of that. It doesn't have any magic for me, but I get it. I mean, there's so much other, like, political baggage and shit that goes along with it, and I'm just not attracted to it enough to deal with all of that. But for some reason, there's
I'm going to perfect this, and okay. Then next year at AMA, we're going to combine the barrel racing with motorcycle archery.
Whoa.
We're going to figure this out. We're going to make it happen.
Okay. I'll say this too. Motorcyclists, for whatever reason, tend to just be into just rock and roll music, right? Motorcycle guys are not usually jazz guys. They're not usually... Some of them are. Yeah. Some of them will tell you they're country music guys, but they listen to country music that's really just southern rock.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, I'm gonna break some people's hearts here. Hank Williams Jr. ain't country. Hank Williams Jr. is southern rock. Okay. Garth Brooks, not country. He's fucking southern rock, or maybe southern pop rock.
That's, I've often said pop, like pop country is much more of a thing, like much more upbeat kind of.
Yeah, it's stuff. Yeah. They you want to listen to some fucking country, break out some fucking Buck Owens, some Slim Whitman, all right? Some Farron Young, some Hank Williams Sr. That's fucking you know, and this will ruffle some feathers too. Johnny Cash, a little more rockabilly than he is country. Sorry. It's not super duper country. It's a little more rockabilly than anything else, actually. Just
no, that's actually why I
come at me, bro.
I'm not come huge at me. Into country myself. Yeah.
Well, I'm super duper into country, but but let's get clear about what country actually is.
Yeah.
But yeah, but motorcycle guys tend to be rock and roll guys as well. In a world where. You know, even younger motorcyclists tend to, you know, like, sure, you'll find some dudes that go out and buy a W800 whose favorite band is Radiohead, but they usually tend to be guys that are like, oh, I'm such an old soul. I'm really into, you know, the old stuff like the Rolling Stones and Lynyrd Skynyrd, man. You know what I mean? That it tends to be a culture that moves towards that 60s, 70s rock and roll culture more than other things, right?
Yeah.
Or even if that's what they listen to on a, if even that's what they don't listen to on a daily day basis, there's a certain reverence for that.
Oh, yeah, I got one for you. Okay. Right. Here's one that a lot of motorcyclists are really into, and this has the biggest crossover for motorcycles of any other hobby. Knives.
Whoa, you're right. Holy shit, I never even thought about that. You are correct. Motorcyclists fucking love knives.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing is... this is...
I don't know anything about knives. I wish I had some more to contribute. I don't know shit about knives.
Well, this is where motorcyclists get really into knives, is the fact that across states, weirdly, there are certain kinds of knives that are more heavily regulated state by state than guns are.
Yep.
So, if you want to have a flick knife, or if you want to have a gravity knife... you've got to check state by state.
What the fuck is a gravity knife?
So a gravity knife is essentially, it's a knife where the whole blade slides into the handle. And you basically have to pull a latch to undo the tension to let the knife come out of the handle. But it's not spring loaded. It's a flick knife without a spring.
Because essentially, its switchblade is pretty much is, well, I know in Pennsylvania is one of those weird, because we have fairly open firearm laws. But yeah, like, it's real tricky. Like, you start looking at the knife laws, and it's all sorts of, like, you can't have a switchblade, so it can't be spring tension, but it can be, like, fold out like that. Like, yeah, like, if you're just,
or you can only have this kind of knife if you're fishing. Ridiculous laws. Colorado is like the only state, like, I think, like, gravity knives, even though there are so many more like aggressive, really kind of nefarious kind of concealed knives that you can have, like, Colorado is like one out of three states that like fully legalized gravity knives.
Okay, I've got another good one for you guys. Because again, I got a lot of these. Here's something that motorcyclists are super fucking into. Just the 1950s.
Okay, I'm guilty.
See? Yeah. So for example,
I'm guilty of a couple of these, but
my Lambretta scooter is from 1959. And I can say to someone, they'll be like, oh, what kind of bikes do you have? I'll be like, well, I got a 78 Goldwing, you know, and you know, we got the Rebel 300. I'll be like, I've got a 1959, and their eyes get real big, and I go, Lambretta scooter. And they only close halfway again because I said 1959. Yeah. And of all the years in the 50s, 1959 is the most magical year in the 50s for them, for reasons I don't understand. You would think 1955 would be more special because it's older, but 1955 is the most sacred year to all motorcyclists ever. And vintage car guys, too. But motorcycle, anything that has... that starts with 195, they're like, oh yeah, that's legit, buddy. You know, I don't know what it is.
It's before all the regulations, I think. Maybe? Before styling started to change and regulations started to kick in. So it was when you could still just, I built this fucking thing and that's it. Just go ride.
Right, but you could be talking about a non-motorized push like cylinder lawnmower and be like, it's a 1957 American cylinder motor, and they're like, oh, I just got hard, you know.
Yeah. it's all nostalgia. It is all nostalgia.
Am I wrong?
No.
As long as it's from 19, you could be like, this is a 1953 all cedar and walnut dollhouse, and they're like, oh yeah, buddy, oh yeah, it's from the 50s. I've got a special edition 1956 Raggedy Ann doll. Oh boy. It doesn't matter what it is, if it's from the 50s, they're fucking into it. It could be a house, it could be a car, it could be a motorcycle, it could be a book. And motorcyclists are not into reading, right? If it's from the 50s, they are into it. I can't explain it. I don't know why. It's just a thing. I don't know. Anything that says established 1950-something, they're just all about the 50s.
I think there's a perception of, like, you hop on your simple, you know, scooter or motorcycle, whatever, right? Something that, like, in your mind, you're thinking, it's just a damn engine. Like, I could fix this. There's not a computer in there that I have to wrestle with or anything else. And I can ride down to the diner and get a burger and fries and a milkshake for $1. And, you know, like, it's just, like, all nostalgia, you know, like...
Yeah, somehow if I ride my vintage bike to Dairy Queen, things might still be 1950s prices.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they won't, but like maybe this time. Right. I don't know.
Also, big plus of any kind of PX150 ripoff is that you can go through the drive-thru and you can put a full size, like a large drink in the glove box, and it will still be upright when you get back home.
It's true. Vespa glove boxes are magical that way. All right, let's dig into some scooter stuff. So I just said motorcyclists are really into the 1950s. Scooterists are into the 1960s. Anything 1960s, whether it's B movies, sci-fi, fashion clothing, sweaters, dresses, hats, sci-fi novellas, I mean anything from the 60s music, especially reggae, I mean it's anything fucking 1960s scooterists just get a fucking big boner over. They are just as guilty as the motorcyclists with the 50s, over 1960s bullshit. And it could be 1960s anything, like children's toys, like whatever. It doesn't matter.
I feel like with scooters, it is a bit of a narrower band, but it is just as hardcore retro. It's really like 1960 to 1975.
Here's another thing scooterists are really fucking into, and I'm guilty because I'm building one in my basement. Tiki and tiki bars. Can't explain it. Scooterists are just all about fucking tiki drinks and tiki bars. I don't know why. Go to any fucking tiki bar. There'll just be a scooter parked outside. There just will be.
Well, what did you guys say to me? It was like, right, throw on some flip-flops and shorts and a tank top and you can just cruise and, you know, then you got drink in one hand, it's twist and go and go chill out at slow speed, right?
Yeah. Well, also, like, you know, we did talk a bit, Peter, you went on your own personal campaign for a while about lowering the reputation of scooterists.
We do need to. Yeah. I make a point when I ride around to flip people off and be an asshole, because I think scooters need a more aggressive image. I think we would get a lot more people riding scooters if it was just dirtied up a little bit.
If it had the same badass image of...
I think we need more violent scooter street gangs. I think we need some U.S. scooter crime.
Stay back whip?
Say what?
Are you going to get a stay back whip?
Oh. A get back whip.
Back whip. Well, the scooter version of the get back whip is the stiletto knife. Right?
Yeah, well, check your laws. Check your local laws, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's a very big scooter thing. Just ignoring the law. Like, oh, you say I need to register my vehicle? Fuck you. Oh, you think I need to, like, obey traffic lights and stop signs? Fuck you. Oh, you say my stiletto knife is illegal and I need to wear a helmet because it's a helmet state law? Fuck you. Scooterists are very comfortable with ignoring the law a lot more than motorcyclists.
The scooterists need to just, like, adopt the balisong and like wield it openly just to dirty the image a bit more,
because
that was a really big thing like in the 90s, like every like hardcore villain just like pulled out a balisong. And maybe we just need to bring that back a bit. Well, again, check your local laws, because knife laws are fucking bullshit.
A fucking knife. Although, again, the UK's doing it right with all the scooters and their knife crime. Well, here we go. John, sometimes I lose my bearings. Do Americans really know what knife crime is?
No, I only have a touch of an idea from listening to various podcasts talking about it.
So in the UK... because there really just aren't guns like there are in this country.
And they are colossal pussies.
Well, you get these gangs of dudes on like 50C scooters, always stolen. And they'll knock over jewelry stores with knives. And when I say knives, I mean like kitchen knives. Like long kitchen knives. And I gotta grab a beer for sweets.
So they don't even have like a baseball bat that they can just pull out.
Well, that's a bit of a thing to carry on a 50cc scooter.
It's always like, very improvised. It's gonna be either a cricket bat or it's going to be a flick knife.
It's often like a smaller, slightly smaller, like home version of a chef's knife, though.
It's like a big kitchen knife. That, or just a jar of acid.
That too.
I heard about the acid thing. Yeah.
The acid's not as bad as you would think, but yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not much worse than like splashing vinegar in someone's face. It's enough to make your eyes like,
Or just a plumber's wrench.
Plumber's wrench. But the idea is that, yeah, there's not a lot of guns, so they ride around on low-powered scooters. But, you know, they're still doing, like, 35
Sorry, just,
miles
just,
an hour.
Just to translate for American audiences, I mean a monkey wrench.
Yeah, right. And they ride around, they'll just knock over a jewelry store with, like, fucking knives. And I think this is a big reason that scooters are way more popular in Europe.
Yeah.
No one's going to call you a pussy when there's roving gangs of people armed with, like blunt and sharp instruments that they're willing to push into your body to get jewelry. It's, you know? So I like to do my part and just, like, flip off families of people sitting at outdoor cafes when I'm riding around on my scooter. I'm doing the Lord's work. So...
Yeah, fuck you, Toyota Sienna.
Yeah, yeah. You think you're representing?
You guys got people rolling coal out there?
Oh, well, it's died off in the last couple years. But wow. It was a big deal a few years ago. I don't think it was ever as big a deal here as it was in the Midwest where you are. And a big reason is... to really effectively roll coal, you need to have a mechanical injection or EFI injection diesel engine, and the newer diesels are just too hard to fucking do it with, and the older ones with the altitude, it's a little harder to dial them in to roll coal. I think it's much easier to do at sea level, so it was never as big a deal here as it was there.
Yeah,
it may also be the only it may also be the only vehicle that has to do emissions that couldn't pass an emissions test in Colorado.
Right. Yeah, they are pretty big about the emissions here. Not as bad as California, but.
Yeah, I mean, we have it too, but, like, I've heard people talk that, you know, they have weight. They'll just, like, fucking modify it, take it in for inspection, then go home and modify it right back.
Oh, the people that were doing it were folks that lived on the other sides. They were from, like, their families lived on the other side of the mountains where they don't have the emissions. The western slope is, like, legit the wild fucking west. And so if you're from, like, Dinosaur or Grand Junction or some fucking place out in the middle of fucking nowhere, they give no shits out there about emissions. There's no testing. So there are dudes that have trucks registered out there, and they just drive them out there once every 3 years, go back and see their grandma and get their plates renewed, and then they come back here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Northwest Colorado, the other side of the Rockies, I imagine it's a lot like Appalachia, where, straight up 20% of the population doesn't even know their social security number.
All right, Swigs, what other weird shit are scooterists into that motorcyclists aren't? Let's put some scooterists on blast. We defend scooters a lot, but let's put some scooterists on blast. Well, not even on blast. Let's expose the culture a bit more.
Scooterists? Okay, the worst, I think for scooterists,
I'm going to go with the reggae.
Oh, I was just going to go straight for bad punk.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. Punk is near and dear to my heart.
I love punk.
Let's just say, like, the scooterist music, which tends to be punk, it tends to be reggae and whatever. These guys that were never into this music just sort of, like, all of a sudden get into this music because they're into scooters. And that's, in my opinion, that's actually just fine. But it is a little bit of a thing. I've gotten into a lot of scooter-adjacent activities, like pinball and the tiki bar and whatever. I feel like I kind of came by those honestly. I went through a big punk rock and reggae and whatever phase when I was much, much, much younger. I have not gotten back into that since getting into scooters, but this is a scooter thing. There's a whole soundtrack that goes with riding scooters. When not new scooters, but the vintage scooter scene, there's a whole thing that goes with that. And I get it. I'm not going to put them on blast necessarily. I did a whole scooter music episode like a year and a half ago or whatever, and you can go back and listen to that for more information on what the scooter music scene is all about. But Swigs is kind of right in that there's a certain like especially that early 70s punk from the UK that they'll just listen to forever. But weirdly, what interests me more is the whole mod scene with all the soul music and like the Motown and all of that that goes along with the scooter music. It's interesting. It's not what you would think it was. And when you dive into why they listened to it, because it was like the I don't know, Motown was almost like the EDM of like the 1960s Britain. You know, there was all sorts of like weird psychedelic and rock and roll stuff, and that was all like the motorcyclist music. But like the Motown and the soul and the reggae was very much like the cutting edge, and that's what the mods and the scooterists were really into. It's not what you would think at first. You would think with America's image of scooters that they would have been the guy, like the guys into like the psychedelic trippy music and whatever, but that's not really so. They were a lot more Motown, soul, funk, reggae influence than anything else. Just a weird thing about scooters. I really wanted Dan to be on the episode to talk about this, and he's not with us, but we're just going to have to announce it anyway. Speaking of scooters, Swigs, we're starting a scooter club. Because here's something weird that scooterists are into. Sci-fi. Don't ask me why. I can't fully explain it. But scooterists are into sci-fi.
Of course they are. Scooters are the mobility of the future. Why were they not?
They're really into Star Wars, and they're really into Star Trek. They're kind of into sci-fi in general, especially like B-movies and stuff like that. But if you just look up a list of scooter clubs in the United States, you will see that at least a third of them have some sort of sci-fi theme to them, whether it's the Jedi Knights Scooter Club or the Vulcans, which are probably like two of the biggest ones. There's just one called the Star Wars Scooter Club. And even beyond that, you go to a scooter meetup, a scooter
I'm going to push rally. Back. Star Wars is not sci-fi.
Oh, it's fantasy, I know. But it's people just put it in the sci-fi camp for whatever reason, even though it really is fantasy. I agree with you. But they're really just scooterists for whatever fucking reason really, really love their sci-fi. And I think it's because years ago, sci-fi was looked down on like scooters were looked down on. I think they were kind of birds of a feather in that, oh, everyone thinks we're just fucking worthless nerds. Let's kind of band together. But nerd culture isn't what it used to be. And I argue scooter culture isn't either. And we're starting our own sci-fi-based scooter club. And it has nothing to do with Star Wars. And it has nothing to do with Star Trek. We're going to be called the Darwins. And it is a Sequest DSV-based scooter club. Now you
that,
might
that
say
that is the correct reaction.
I remember watching that show as a kid, but I don't remember any of it. But
oh, it's wonderful.
I remember watching it. Yeah.
I have a lot of arguments that it is absolutely 100% superior to Star Wars and Star Trek. First of all, it's superior to all things Star Wars because, like Swigs so accurately pointed out, Star Wars isn't sci-fi. It's fantasy.
Right.
Second, it is superior to Star Trek in so many ways. I'll see your Gene Roddenberry, and I'll up the ante one executive producer, Steven Spielberg. I'll see your who's the actor played Wesley Crusher?
Will Wheaton.
I'll see your Will Wheaton and raise you one Jonathan Brandis.
Well, you could raise it by just saying not Will Wheaton.
Not Will Wheaton. I'll see your Spock and Data and raise you one Darwin, the talking dolphin. Right? It goes on and on. How about some of television's most groundbreaking 3D computer effects? Pretty impressive for the time. Episode 1 is very weak on the CGI, but as soon as you get into like halfway through the first season, it's a lot better than you remember CGI being in 1993.
See, this is the thing, right? Is I remember seeing this as a kid. And it's like, and I thought, I should go back and try and watch that. And then I went, you know what? You have vague good memories of watching that show. Leave them as vague good memories and don't ruin it for yourself.
It's probably not going to hold up for everyone, but it holds up for me. I'll see Picard.
Patrick Stewart.
I'll see your Patrick Stewart and raise you a Roy Scheider. It's in the ocean. He's the sheriff from Jaws. Yeah. He killed Jaws, right? It's beautiful.
And then he went under the sea.
I'll see your Captain Riker. I can't remember the actor's name. And raise you a Ted Raimi. Ted Raimi, brother of Sam Raimi, film director. The cast is full of gems. It's wonderful. I can go on and on about how the setting and the cast is a better setting for sci-fi than the USS Enterprise.
Well, I will also say it's weirdly it's a way as a human story and like doing kind of a more of a like a sci-fi kind of traveling like Shakespearean show. It does it better than Star Trek does because they only go to other places where there are people. So there's no alien, like there's no brief on what the aliens think. It's always a human story because all of the protagonists and antagonists are always humans.
Yeah. So like in Star Trek, the original series, right? Spock is half human, half Vulcan, and he's always trying to deny his human half so he can be this sort of like android pure logic exposition machine. He's just there to tell you what's going on. He doesn't really advance anyone's story arc in any meaningful way. I mean, he does that a little bit in some of the movies, but generally he's just an exposition machine. Now, Star Trek The Next Generation does it much better with Data, who is an exposition machine. He's literally a machine, but he's always trying to discover his human half, which isn't really there. But that's a lot more interesting, right? This machine trying to take on a human element. It's a little bit better. Now, the genius of Sequest is that it doesn't even try to play that game. It just says, fuck you, we have a talking dolphin. It's See, wonderful.
This is all quite fitting. Like, you are a connoisseur of the odd and the outlier and the black sheep of the group. And so it's just like, no, why would you go for the popular choice of Star Trek or Star Wars in any sense? No, well, I will go with the one that some people have heard of and might
but
remember.
You've heard of it. That's the important thing, right?
You've like, heard of it.
You remember,
like,
even though it was from 1993, you remember that Sequest had Roy Scheider and a talking dolphin. Mm-hmm. Now, even though it's from the same writer-producer, what do you remember about Farscape?
Oh, see, I never even looked at that.
Exactly.
Well, I can tell you a lot about.
I know you can,
because I watched all of it.
Now, Farscape is a pretty good series too, but it says a lot about Sequest that you remember it, right? Yeah. Like, And now, you only remember Star Trek because Star Trek has this weird nerd following, and there's also been about 19 different Star Trek series.
Oh, yeah, I'm still
watching it. So it's this big
behemoth
of television, right? But if Star Trek had ended at the Next Generation, I argue it wouldn't really be that much of a thing today.
Yeah, or if it had ended, if it had ended originally how it had, three seasons out of a 5-year mission on the original series, and everyone was like, yeah, whatever, we don't
know. Right. Like, so, but for only running three seasons, a lot of people remember Sequest. I think that speaks to its quality.
Yep.
I'm just saying. So anyway, we're starting a Sequest-based scooter club. And here are the criteria for being a member, okay? Number one, you need to own a scooter that you ride in traffic, that you have or will be continuing to ride in traffic. I don't care if it's a Razor Pocket mod, like children's electric play scooter. As long as you're willing to ride it in traffic and it meets the definition of a scooter, which is go to the Scooter Cannonball website and look at their definition of a scooter. I think that's about as best as you're going to find for a scooter definition. So if you own a scooter of any kind, I don't care if it's electric, I don't care if it's gas, I don't care if it's 50cc, I don't care if it's 25cc, I don't care if it's 400cc. If it's a scooter that you're willing to ride in traffic, that's number one. Number two, I need you to own a Sequest DSV action figure in the box. Now, this sounds like a tall order, but the most expensive Sequest action figure I have found in the box is $18. These things are polluting eBay like it's the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. They are plentiful and cheap, okay? They are not hard. I hope you're all sitting down. They didn't sell very well, okay? So finding one in the box is not a tall order. Now, I mean, I'm sure after this episode, there's going to be a big run on them, so you may want to move quickly. But, all right, number three, I need you to write an essay. No determined length or topic, actually. Just impress me. I just want an essay of some kind. You can mail it to me in person, email it, send it to contact@nokomotopodcast.com. Four, you're going to have to read the essays of everyone that has joined before you and then sign a document denouncing Star Wars and Star Trek and asserting that Sequest DSV is superior to those as sci-fi fantasy series. And the last one, the last criteria is you'll have to Venmo me some amount of money that you believe will cover the cost of your patches, stickers, and scooter leg shield banner, which you are required to display on your scooter at every scooter gathering you go to. Not daily riding, but any, you know, scooter meetups. Otherwise, that's it. There's no, like, you know, yearly membership fees. There's no, you know, if someone else who's a Darwin, like, rolls into town, you don't have to, like, buy them a beer or anything. You don't have to attend any meetups. There's nothing required that way. You know, there's no mission statements. We're not, like, we don't have, like, a charity cause for kids or anything. It's just, yeah. I would like it if someone brings up Star Trek that you do learn some of these Sequest versus Star Trek talking points. That would be a plus. I'd really enjoy it. But you don't have to. You know. I don't even require that you've ever seen Sequest, in fact. I mean, it's a big plus if you have. But know that it is a Sequest DSV-based club. And that's important to the club. It doesn't have to be important to you, but it is important to the club. Well, you know, like, clubs are dumb, and this is going to be the dumbest club, right?
Well, I mean, is there any club that isn't dumb?
No. Why we're the dumbest club.
Yeah, we're peaking right now.
Yeah, if there were any clubs that weren't dumb, we would try to be part of that club. But all the clubs are dumb. So I just want to be part of the dumbest club. Yeah. And to be honest, looking at what clubs were available, really none of them were dumb enough for me. So I'm just kind of creating the club that I want to be a part of. Look, this seems insane to a lot of other people. It makes perfect sense to me, okay? It's one of my favorite shows. I've seen every episode. I love it. I mean, is it a great show? I don't know. Star Trek? Yes.
Also, I mean, you can't have
easily.
You can't have a scooter club based around the Mantis. So,
well, I thought about having a Mantis-based scooter club also, but that's also really fantasy more than it's sci-fi.
Well, it was
it's
very
really a superhero show more than anything else.
It was very sci-fi up until the time travel and the invisible T-Rex.
I really did toy around with an X-Files scooter club as well, but ultimately I'm just so loyal to Sequest. I can't explain it. It's just the perfect choice. Hey, Josh, if you had to pick a sci-fi series to base a scooter club on, and I know this is like you've thought about this a lot, like
yes,
what would have been your first choice?
I had all week to prepare for this. I mean, you know what? I'm going to go with another known, but maybe not the most popular. We'll go with Firefly.
Firefly's not a bad choice.
Firefly is it's good subject matter, but I think it's too popular. It's not punk enough.
I'm not concerned about the popularity. Oh, this actually brings up an important point. Some clubs need you to be exclusive to their club. We will accept members from other scooter clubs, by the way. I mean, you may have to denounce the premise of your other scooter club, but that's up to you and your God. You know, I'm not going to get in the way of that.
Now, if you want to go now, if I can go with a movie, I'll give you one that's just really weird. Dark City.
I'm not familiar with that.
So, it's got Rufus Sewell in it. Who's the dude from The Lost Boys?
Corey Feldman?
No. With the
Corey voice. Haim?
No. No, it has the raspy voice. But
I think you're thinking of Corey Feldman.
No.
Raspy voice. Kiefer Sutherland?
Yes, Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah, it's got Rufus Sewell and Kiefer Sutherland in it. And so guy wakes up and he can't like remember who he is, but he's accused of murder. And then he's like on the run and there's these like, you know, without going into like complete spoiler territory, goes on the run from these like pasty faced guys who can like control shit with their mind, have like telekinesis and stuff. Yeah.
I mean, if we really wanted
to
go...
It's like scary sci-fi, yeah.
Yeah. If we really wanted to go off the rails, again, it's probably more fantasy than sci-fi, but there was a great made-for-TV kids movie, Adventures in Dinosaur City. That would be a great scooter club.
That's one way to go.
The Last Dinosaur.
Besides that, if you want to go from a pop... A pop culture angle, you'd have to really, really be exclusive in the bikes that you chose, but you could do an Akira motorcycle club.
Yeah. Well, so the problem with motorcycle clubs is there's this there's this set motorcycle club aesthetic, right? So, you know, let's take a motorcycle club that is decidedly not a street gang thinly veiled as something else, like the vampires, right? That California gang, and they're all about, you know, peace and love and togetherness and whatever. But they're still wearing, like, the black leather cuts and shit. And if you don't know what they are, you're like, there's another asshole from an MC, you know? And a nice thing about a scooter club is you're not really tied into some bullshit. And, you know, some, like, there's, like, the Ace Scooter Club here in Colorado, and, like, they're all just Lambretta guys. And there's other clubs and whatever, and there's clubs that are, you know, all kinds of scooters, and there's clubs that are just vintage scooters, and it's like, you're already a pretty small subculture. Why are you dicing it up that way, right? Like, I don't care if you're on a Honda Gyro, or an old Lambretta, or a mobility scooter, or whatever. I don't give a fuck, okay? It's already a pretty small subculture. You know, yeah, we're up here in Greeley. We're going to do a few rides a year. We're going to, you know, but we got a pinball arcade and a tiki bar in town and some other bullshit. We can do it just as well as anyone else. It's going to be a good time. And I don't need any money from you. I just don't want to have to pay for your patch and your Link Shield banner. And I do want to see the minimal amount of effort. Yeah, I want you to at least write a high school level paper and send it to me.
See, I'm ready to buy the Sequest like box set and watch them all just so that we can have a discussion.
It's a very attainable
thing. It's actually better.
You don't need to. In fact, the best way to watch it is for free on the Roku channel because you get the commercials in it and. You get the commercial breaks just like you would have gotten in the original episodes. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you could watch a Bounty commercial from 1993 or a Bounty commercial from 2023. It's the same thing, you know? It's pretty good. Although, I didn't realize how weird commercials have gotten. There was, Claire and I were watching some episodes the other day. And there was this commercial all about, like, shaving pubic hair. And they must have said pubic hair 23 times. And there was this cartoon girl that was like, I won't be embarrassed. I will say pubic hair. It got weird. Commercials are aggressive. But whatever. I think that's part of watching a series like Sequest or Star Trek is the commercial interruption. It's good stuff. You know, there's some great Sequest episodes. I gotta tell you, the plots are just as good as Next Generation.
No, you know,
oh no, I know.
We had a VHS copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1, and
the original movie.
We did,
yes. Which is a masterpiece, yeah.
And it came the VHS came with pre-roll commercials, and it's locked in my mind.
Oh, you're talking about the Peter, Paul, and Mary baseball song?
Yeah,
it's got. I play right field. It's important, you know. No. You gotta learn how to catch. You gotta learn how to throw. That's why I play it right field, way out where the dandelions grow. Yeah, it's Peter, Paul, and Mary. It's a classic.
Wow.
Yeah, but my entire impression of like
23 people just stopped what they were doing and like looked off in the distance. Like, yeah. They're like, that's something I haven't heard for a long time.
I grew up hearing that stuff. My parents played that all the time on road trips. Yep.
I just remember 90s commercials during all of that stuff as being, well, it was a combination of Pizza Hut commercials. It was incontinence commercials of some kind.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was... mesothelioma. It was people. It was a call to action for people to join a mesothelioma.
Oh, class action lawsuit.
And after that, it was car insurance and oh, what was the other one? It's really like five things that were just like you are bombarded with in that time span. Or in local car dealership commercials. The local car dealership commercials were always
like, I miss local car dealers in commercials. They always just like dress as superheroes, but my favorite is they would have some new employee in the back that could do like the world's worst Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonation. And so they would always like try to cram in as many bad celebrity voice impersonations as they could just from the dudes that worked at the car dealership.
Yeah.
Oh, that was gold.
But they were always trying to be really excited, but also they were 30 feet
away. Sunday, come down. And they'd be like, you will come down and get the best deals ever. And it would be an Arnold impersonation that bad. And someone would be like, I'm Steven Seagal, and you're going to get a good deal if you come down to Ace Ford. And,
but then it would always be like some guy like 30 feet away from the camera going like, come down now. But he was 30 feet away. And he didn't think...
Oh, they do the big zoom as he raised his arms. Yeah.
Right. But also, he didn't think that he would need to, like, voice over his own acting and record it close to a microphone.
Oh, no, they would just boost the gain and there'd be huge static noise.
Like, it was more like, calm down now! Because they just had to just... boost it all the way to shit just to get the voice to go.
Oh, it was a different time. It was a different time. Yeah. And these are the sorts of memories that we'll relive at every Darwin scooter meetup. Because we'll sit around, we'll blast a classic episode of Sequest DSV on a projector on the side of some building, and then we'll go play some pinball. We'll have some drinks in my tiki bar. And hopefully we'll, like, you know, crash a scooter or something. I don't know. We'll do some scooter jousting. We'll do some, I don't know, whatever bullshit. You know, we'll do some slow races. We'll do some Gymkhana. We'll do all the shit they do at regular scooter meetups, you know. But it's going to be Sequest-based. And we can all have a smug sense of superiority, knowing that we have a much more tasteful, classy choice of sci-fi series.
Whenever we do the first meetup, I promise I will shave my head and I will do a full Gelf cosplay.
Oh wow. I mean we can have some like some blue light up rocks eventually that we give to special members. We can, I mean, these are deep cuts into Sequest here. We can have a Dr. Z dress up contest, the Dr. Zeller dress up contest. We can have, eventually I'd like us all to have Sequest jumpsuits. That would be really wonderful for me. But, you know, just the like shield banners and some patches and stickers will be good enough. So I'll put it out there also. The only thing that really needs to get this thing off of the ground, we've already got like plenty. I mean, you couldn't imagine how people are lining up to be part of this club already. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. We're going to have to be a little choosy about who we let in. But the only thing that's stopping us from getting completely off the ground and to start accepting members like right now is a good logo. I would kind of like something like a listener, if they could, to get into Photoshop and create something like, I'm between a couple different ideas. If someone could create for me a picture of Daria from Beavis and Butthead, but with huge tits riding a dolphin, I'd really be into that as a logo. Otherwise, the United Earth Oceans insignia that just says, you know, Darwin's and then Scooter Club below it would be pretty tasteful and good as well. But really, if someone out there who's like a true artiste wants a challenge, Daria with big tits riding a dolphin, I'm into that.
I think that'd be pretty good, yeah.
Big tits.
Be pretty solid.
Like nipples, like poking through. That would be, smoking a cigarette also would be a bit of a plus for me. That would sweeten the pot. But, you know, She doesn't have to be smoking. It's 2023. But, I mean, be nice. You know, I'm just saying. So, like I said, there's a lot of people lined up to join this club. I mean, lots. It's... There's a lot of Jedi Knights that want to switch clubs. There's a lot of people. John from Castle Lambretta is ready to go. Most of the guys from Sportique. I think Phil was like, look, I'll give you a hand job out back, whatever we got to do to get this done. I don't think we're going to let Phil in, though. But, I mean, don't tell him that. It's kind of embarrassing. But anyway, the Darwin Scooter Club, Sequest DSV-based sci-fi fantasy hardcore scooter club. It's going to be good. Like I said, clubs are dumb. This is the dumbest. Therefore, it's the best.
It's hard to argue with.
It's just good math. Okay, we're at almost 2 hours. I think we need to end this episode, guys. Unless anyone has anything important to add after this. No?
This may be one of the dumbest episodes we've ever done.
Hey, some people might think this is a joke, but the Darwin Scooter Club is 100% real. 100%.
I mean, I can't wait to go to cons and see everyone dressed up as DSV characters instead of Star Trek characters, you know, pulling up, like, rubbing elbows with, you know.
I agree. This club will probably turn the tide and make this kind of the premier thing to cosplay as at cons. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to be at cons, but the influence is probably going to be that far reaching.
There'll be a ripple effect. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people are going to know. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to know.
Then you're going to see, like, soon you're going to see one of those, like, little articles where, like, BuzzFeed's like, DSV, it's being reconsidered now. Is it a hidden gem? You know, and they'll just
how
amazing it was.
We're going to bypass all of that. It's just going to show up, and they're going to be like, what the fuck just happened?
Oh, will we get a reboot?
No,
reboot.
The journalists aren't going to know about this. It's just going to happen.
Oh, no. This is the brilliant thing about... No, this is the thing about sci-fi series. You don't have to reboot them, right? So, like, Star Trek, you know, you had Star Trek, you know, TOG, you have Star Trek TNG, then you have Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Enterprise, right? We've only had... Think about this. There's been so many Star Trek series. We've only had the first Sequest series, right? It'll just be like, oh, we're finally going to do the second series. So the first one was Sequest DSV, Deep Submergence Vehicle. We'll get to the second one, which I don't know what that's going to be. I mean...
Maybe the Sequest crew... can, like, perfect the amphibious motors.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Sure. I mean, yeah. It'll be Sequest Wet Bike. Yeah.
They're all expert riders. The only ones who know how to do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like where this is going. Sequest Wet Bike is...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have to call it something like the Sea Lion. Or something.
Guys,
like,
I don't think we're going to do any better than Sequest Wet Bike. We really need to end this now. That's probably the best we're possibly going to do. All right. So, this has been episode whatever the fuck. Let me find my sound effects. But for real, the Scooter Club, it's going into effect. So send your emails and your essays, and we'll get this going. All right.
And I don't want to die. I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Mm-hmm, cold.